Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez on the show tonight.
There's a lot of frustration.
Immigrant advocates react as a judge blocks Biden's program offering legal status to undocumented spouses.
I started worrying about living to take another test.
A local activist shared his story at the Democratic National Convention, how he's encouraging other young people to take action against gun violence.
The schools are in great need. The community is in a great need. You know, they want to raise their children to be bilingual.
And how a Chicago business owner is helping kids access bilingual books. And now to some of today's top stories. Chicago is facing its largest budget deficit since the height of the COVID pandemic. Mayor Brandon Johnson says his office is projecting a $982 million shortfall in 2025. On top of that, the city's budget for the current year is also in the red, $223 million. Officials cite lower than expected corporate tax revenues and Chicago Public Schools not making a payment to its employee pension fund for this year's budget gap. Johnson says sacrifices will be made, but declined to discuss specifically how he plans to fill the gap. He did not rule out a property tax increase. Check out our website for the full budget forecast. And the Chicago Transit Authority is announcing a new gun detection system pilot. The CTA says the AI-based technology Zero Eyes works by using existing security cameras to identify brandished guns. You're seeing a demonstration video of it now. If a firearm is identified, the technology sends an image to operation centers for human verification. If verified, Zero Eyes staff would then alert local law enforcement with a photo of the suspect, gun type, and specific location. The CTA says the 12-month contract is paid with funds from the annual operating security budget. The technology is also currently used at Navy Pier, according to the CTA. If you're planning to catch a flight at O'Hare or midway for Labor Day weekend, make sure to arrive early. That's because Chicago's Department of Aviation is anticipating a record-breaking 1.4 million travelers to pass through O'Hare this Labor Day weekend, making it one of the busiest in the airport's history. Officials say the busiest travel day at O'Hare will be Monday. Meanwhile, at Midway, officials are anticipating a 3% increase in travelers over last year and say tomorrow will be the busiest travel day. So make sure to have a backup plan in case of cancellations and delays. And start your engines. The two-day NASCAR street race is returning to Grand Park for the third year, next July. NASCAR says the course will remain the same, taking drivers on DuSable Lakeshore Drive, Michigan Avenue, and Columbus Drive. This marks the final year of NASCAR's three-year contract with the city. No word on whether the company plans on extending the contract. Some environmental advocates have pushed back over the years, saying they don't think the money generated is worth the damage it causes to streets and the environment. Up next, the judge blocks a program offering legal status to undocumented spouses. We have local reaction right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Undocumented individuals are now in limbo after a Texas judge blocks one of President Biden's immigration policies. The program allows undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens to apply for a green card and eventually citizenship without leaving the country, known as parole in place. The White House estimated about 500,000 people were eligible for the program. Here with more on the local impact are Paola Roa, immigration attorney and legal aid volunteer, Sam Sanchez, member of the American Business Immigration Coalition and CEO of Third Coast Hospitality, and via Zoom, Alderman Raymond Lopez of the 15th Ward. We also reached out to a number of opponents to President Biden's program, but they were not able to join. Thank you all for joining us. Paola, I want to start with you. With the block in this program, what does that mean for families now?
So thank you for having me, Joanna, on the program. This is a huge setback for a lot of families. Families don't have the financial ability to be able to first able to afford going back out of the country. So I want to kind of go backward and say, this is not something that families that are undocumented and married to spouses of U.S. citizens don't already have the opportunity to do. This allows for parole, which is a lawful admission, which would make that process a lot faster, which allows families not to have to leave the country to be able to become green card holders. And it allows for family members also not to have to have the financial responsibility of having to leave the country, spend thousands of dollars to do that, and also take the risk of leaving because some don't know if they're going to be able to come back in.
And again, these were people who've been here for more than 10 years. And the program was estimated to help thousands of undocumented spouses of immigrants, I just mentioned. Can they still apply?
So, like I said, this program is not a program that is a new in the sense that spouses of undocumented folks that are U.S. citizens can apply for status. This is a program specifically for those that entered unlawfully. Those that enter unlawfully basically have a barrier to be able to apply for a green card. And as it stands, that barrier includes having to leave the country and come back in to be able to become green card holders. And this program basically waives that entry, that unlawful entry. And so that makes families' ability to be able to stay here just a lot more feasible for a myriad of reasons.
And what considers it a law unlawful entry? Because we know many stories who people who've crossed the border.
Yes. So legally, when you enter, if you enter and you are admitted and inspected by immigration, then that's a lawful admission. That's just how immigration defines that.
And Sam, I want to go to you as a member of the American Business for Immigration Coalition. How is this block impacting business owners and entrepreneurs who've been working here for years?
So I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Well, definitely, I mean, we've seen an impact during the pandemic and how people that are here with lawful documentation took those 2 years off, collected unemployment of up to $1,000 a week. The only people that were able to keep our business open were people who were undocumented. And I mean, they ran into back to work like a fireman runs into a burning house. We need them. We need the workforce. And we owe it to them. We're talking about 500,000, not 12 million pre-pandemic or another 8 or 10 million that came in. 500,000 that are married to American citizens, fathers or mothers of children, American citizens, who are at voting age.
What type of jobs would you say they have?
Right now, without documentation, people have gone to college, and some of them have their master's. Okay, have to work at jobs that don't qualify for what they went to school for, which is a shame because they're talented, they're engineers, they're accounting. They have such a great talent and skills that they could share with our country.
And you hear many of these stories.
Every day this morning, and I was trying to explain to someone that the process is still there. It's going to take time. I think that for Ted Cruz to push a judge in Texas to do this, I mean, it's totally unjust because this is American people married to American citizens.
Of course. And Alderman Lopez, going to you, your ward has a large population of Latinos. What would you say citizenship means for these families?
Well, I just want to point out, Joanna, that the last time that we actually had meaning legislation and reform to give undocumented individuals a pathway forward was when the Bears actually won the Super Bowl. So it has been decades since we've actually taken a serious attempt at allowing people to come out of the shadows. And in many cases, we have individuals, to Sam's point, who have been here for almost two generations now, waiting for a path forward, having families, putting down roots, having their entrepreneur spirit dampened because they don't have a path to legally do what everyone else is doing around them. And I think that it's unfortunate that this 14-day stay on this executive order has been issued, while other executive orders dealing with the limiting of asylum seekers has allowed to be maintained. We have two different policies, two different views when it comes to asylum seekers and undocumented individuals in our country. And I think that we need to address the undocumented situation first, because many people, especially many of the Mexican undocumented whom I represent, have been waiting for decades for a chance to legalize their status, to come out of the shadows. And both parties have failed them on that front.
And earlier we spoke with Giselle Rodriguez. Her husband is a U.S. citizen, and she was planning on applying for parole in place, but she says a temporary hold has left her and other members of her community discouraged. Let's take a listen.
But it is frustrating, I heard her family say. Well, you know, what's the point? Like, it's just going to be stuck there forever, like DACA. Or, for example, I think one of the families that was talking to me saying, like, we don't do anything bad to them. Like, why are they doing this to us? So there's a lot of frustration.
Paula, what's your reaction to what you just heard?
It's tragic. I mean, as a first-generation immigrant myself, I understand what it's like to be in those shoes. I was undocumented until I was 15. And so I get that. My family gets that. My heart goes out to all the families that have to go through this. I'm thankful that I'm an immigration attorney and I'm able to do this, but it's very frustrating for my clients. It's very frustrating for people that have hopes and dreams and with a lot to contribute to our economy.
And you do a lot of work with helping people as well. What has that, you know, feedback been like when the news happened that this program was paused?
Just sheer disappointment. I try and keep my clients hopeful that this is just a 14-day stay. It needs to be heard on the merits. But we have to wait and see what the courts decide, unfortunately.
And Sam, what about you? What were your thoughts of what she said?
You know, it's definitely sad. I mean, I got married in Mexico, which is people who live in close to the border. We're from close to the border. So people in Texas travel to Mexico every weekend or every other weekend. And the visits relatives and families, and you meet someone that you want to spend the rest of your life with. And how is it that an American citizen cannot have someone come to this country, stay with them, to make a life together? I mean, my wife and I have three beautiful daughters that are lawyers, entrepreneurs, create jobs. They have over 800 employees, pay taxes. I mean, we had nothing but progress to offer to this country.
And what would you say that those 16 states opposing this program failed to grasp about the importance of this program?
I'm glad you asked that question, because during the pandemic, when they were denied, the family of mixed status, they were denied help and the COVID relief, President Trump rectified an injustice and made sure they got their money. So if he thought it was right, then they should know it's right.
And Alderman Lopez, Attorney General Ken Paxton, who is part of the lawsuit putting a hold on this program, posted a tweet celebrating the temporary hold, in part saying Biden's unconstitutional scheme would have rewarded over 1 million illegal aliens with the opportunity for citizenship after breaking our country's laws. What are your thoughts on this response?
Well, I think the Attorney General is an idiot, to be perfectly frank. The fact of the matter is that both parties have benefited and allowed for a broken immigration system to exist for decades, since Ronald Reagan gave them the opportunity to reset and restructure the laws accordingly in 1987. We know that both parties, from their own perspectives, have allowed this to persist, either to benefit their constituencies or their corporate interests. This is not the fault of the undocumented individual who believes in this country, who wants to seek the American dream and had no functional front door to do it. And we see even now where individuals are applauding themselves for propping open the back door rather than fix the front door. If they truly wanted to fix immigration, they would allow for an easier way to enter into this country and stay here legally, while addressing the fact that there are many individuals whom they openly welcome to work in their friends' factories and other things, to be here under the radar. It's not a political issue anymore, because there are so many millions of people whose lives are at stake and whose families are rooted here, that we now have to act like statesmen and address this issue once and for all.
And Alderman, I want to talk about what's next. We only have a couple seconds. Paola, the hold is 14 days.
Correct.
Can they extend that? What can happen?
They can absolutely extend that hold.
Yes.
It's up to the judge at this point to decide. I think they're trying... The administration is trying to have a hearing on the merits of it, but they can decide to extend it as long as they want. The judge has given both sides till I believe sometime in September to respond, and we just have to wait and see.
Well, thank you all for your input.
But I do want to add one thing, though, that you cannot say that one executive order is legal and the other one is illegal when they are both dealing with the same issue of immigration and asylum.
Well, thank you.
You can't have your cake and eat it too.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you. Up next, meet a local activist who took the stage at the Democratic National Convention.
Thank you.
Just politicians and celebrities who took the stage at last week's Democratic National Convention. Community activists were also among the spotlighted speakers. Advocates shared their stories about how gun violence has impacted their lives and inspired them to take action. Our next guest was one of those speakers who now uses his voice to teach other young people in Chicago how to influence change. Here's what he had to say.
I was in high school when my classmate got shot. It changed my story. Instead of worrying about taking a test, I started worrying about living to take another test. They say schools are for learning, and I did learn a lot that day. I learned how to run, how to hide and drop, that what happens in the news can happen to me. But I learned something else too, that we can write and must write a new story if we choose to.
Joining us now with more is Edgar Velches, a young council member at Project Unloaded. Congrats on being on that big stage. I'm sure you have to be proud of yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, completely proud and still processing it.
And you mentioned that this was the first time you're watching your video back.
Yeah, it's literally first time.
So tell me, why share your story with the thousands of people there?
I feel like, you know, the convention's here in Chicago, and, you know, after personal experiences and, you know, living here in Chicago all of my 19 years of being here, I feel like, you know, it's being representative of my city, but also representative of youth and their experiences with gun violence.
I forget that you're only 19 years old.
Yep.
And talking about that, you grew up in Chicago and witnessed gun violence at school. Remind us what happened and what was that like for you?
Yeah, I keep still recalling the moments here is that I was in junior year in high school. So it's like 3 years from ago from now, and that situation happened in which I witnessed one of the students get shot, specifically hearing gunshots, and then having one of the staff come here and be like, run, like everybody get inside. And, you know, knocking on doors of, like, the school to say, like, let us in, like, please. And then students being divided. It was a whole situation. And, you know, that was pretty traumatizing for me. Because for me, it's like, yeah, you hear on the news so many times that guns are in your community, but now they're in my life. And I feel like that was the biggest thing that triggered on me.
Would you say that inspired you to talk about gun violence prevention? What was it after that that you decided I want to join and raise my voice?
I feel like the majority of me is like where it happened is in the street that I walk on to go to school. And if it wasn't that individual, it could have been me that day or one of my closest friends. And I feel like when we see situations already occur in our community, we really have to start to think, and it's like, what can we do to change that cycle and break the system?
And you mentioned you were interning for the DNC committee. What was that like?
It was like a once-in-a-lifetime experience working at the DNC. I was under the political and coalitions team, in which we work with our ally groups, nonprofit organizations, to be represented at the DNC. You know, they're the backbone of where, you know, this democracy is heading. And I feel like, you know, working with individuals like the orgs that I am part of.
And then working with other, I assume, young individuals as well.
Yes, young individuals across the country, 15 of us, you know, representing all over the states and here for a mission and, you know, having our voice be in the stage.
That's awesome. And going back to your speech, you ended by saying we can write and must write a new story if we choose to. What would you say is your new story?
I feel like my story is just the beginning of it. You know, we had those experiences. In my case, you know, hearing those gunshots, seeing the blood of someone of my classmates get shot. And it's like, you know, time to rewrite the story of advocacy, of change, that it's like a gun could change someone's story on the negative side. But I'm here advocating to change that. And, you know, being on stage with other individuals, with Congresswoman Lucy Macbeth, to people from the Uvalde shooting, it's like their stories were changed, but now we're here advocating, and our story's just beginning.
Would you say that inspired you even more?
That inspired me, hearing, like, you know, the survivors on stage, that we're not alone, but, you know, that our stories are heard, but we need to create the change, and that change is to do something now.
And I've actually interviewed you before with the organization Project Unloaded. Talk to me about how you connect with students with the organization.
I feel with a lot of what we do with Project Unloaded is that we take aside from the politics and we bring a new perspective into the arena of targeting gun violence for real. And I feel like one of the things that we use a lot of social media platforms like Instagram and TikTok and different platforms in order to pursue a message, you know, that guns make us less safe in our communities. And, you know, the majority of the time is targeting youth because we hear the phrase, we are the future, we are the now. Now it's time to change that.
And you were actually a judge for a contest this summer where students created social media campaigns to teach others about gun violence. What was that experience like, and what would you say you learned the most?
I feel like what I learned the most is that what Chicago could bring to the table, seeing youth that I was literally in the same like steps a few years back, seeing how they're now doing the work that I'm continuing to do, seeing youth from the ages of 13 to 18 coming up with campaigns that I was like, whoa, I didn't even think of that. And they're creating poetry, they're creating videos, campaigns that Project Unnoticed continue to amplify. And I'm like, we have so much to bring in our table in Chicago, let's share it out to the country.
Would you say sometimes it bothers you how much Chicago is spotlighted for its violence?
I feel like sometimes we get that, like, for example, that, oh yeah, Chicago might be the most dangerous city, but we have to stay, take a step back and realize what's making it dangerous. Is it really that dangerous? Why are we not looking at the states around us? How can we change that message that, Chicago is dangerous, but, targeting the issue of the root cause?
And what would you say you hope that students take away from their story with their experience with Project Unloaded?
I feel the main thing is that, we always say we had campaigns in the past in which we use hashtag snug with guns, guns don't make us safe. And now a new campaign that we're continuing to launch here in Chicago is Guns Change the Story, and not including that on my segment at the DNC, because it changed my story.
Do you believe those make a difference?
I do. We continue to reach millions and thousands of students all across. And if a lot of youth don't pay attention a lot to the news, but we are on social media. We're scrolling on TikTok, and you see an ad that's popped up that it's like, guns change the story in what way? And that triggers someone to do something about it.
And again, we know that you're going back to college. You're going back to Cornell University.
Mm-hmm.
When do you go back?
Yeah, I go back next week as I continue to study government.
Well, thank you so much. We know you have a bright future ahead of you.
Thank you so much.
Up next, bringing bilingual books to Chicago public school students. Chicago public schools have faced challenges in providing bilingual programming for students, along with access to books in their native language. Currently, around 40 Chicago public schools offer dual language programs. We spoke with the teacher turned business owner who is working to bridge this gap and ensure students have access to bilingual materials.
Había una vez un niño llamado Bombo que le encantaban las tortas.
Laura Romani says, as a child, she felt most at home when surrounded by books.
We went to the library. The library was like our safe space where we could get help from the librarians for homework, use the computers.
Now she's opening her own book haven. Los Amigos Books is a bilingual bookstore in the Bucktown neighborhood.
So we make sure that all of our bilingual books are written by Latino authors and that they speak to our experiences. So obviously, sana, sana, colita de rana is something that mom used to tell us when we used to get hurt.
Before owning a business, Romani spent 5 years as a dual language teacher, instructing students in both English and Spanish.
As a teacher, I noticed the need, but then I saw that same problem and need for myself when I became a mom. And I had those goals of having my son know how to speak Spanish, how to read Spanish. He's the big inspiration for the space.
Her passion for books also led her to study to become a school librarian, where she learned about international purchasing.
The main assignment in the course was to go down to the International Book Fair in Guadalajara and source some books for a customer that may be in need. And luckily, my customer was our school's librarian, and we were a dual language program. So I asked her what she needed. I went and I sourced it and brought it back. So that experience really left a mark on me.
The life-changing experience set her on a new path. With her background in purchasing books, Romani now serves as a vendor for Chicago Public Schools, making sure they have access to bilingual books.
School districts are finally realizing what we always knew, that bilingualism is our greatest asset, and it's something that they have a responsibility of helping us develop. So we are seeing that shift, and with that shift comes a greater need for the resources.
Romani says she wants children to feel represented by the books in her store.
And our logo is me and him, and there's a little book and a little heart because it's, it's all done with the mindset that it's for the younger generation like my son.
She runs the bookstore with her husband just a few blocks away from her husband's childhood home in Logan Square, a neighborhood where she hopes to make her mark.
It feels really good to have a space for the community, to take up space, to show people that we are here, that we belong here, and that our experiences and our language matter.
The store offers a selection of Spanish and bilingual children's books, as well as books for adults. We have more details on our website. And that's our show tonight. Be sure to check to subscribe to our newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News. And of course, join us tomorrow night at 5:37 and 10 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Stay healthy, stay safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its founder and senior partner, Robert Clifford, who ranked number one in the state of Illinois by Super Lawyers Top 10 2024 Illinois Super Lawyers List.